Here's my feeling, Michael, just kind of building on what we talked about last week. As being the son of a quarterback, Bert Bell was a quarterback first before he was a coach, an owner, or commissioner, and thinking like a quarterback. And I look at the evolution of the quarterback from the first quarterback, and I was too young then to play for my father, Davey O'Brien, to then Sid Luckman, Sammy Ball, all the way through Otto Graham, Unitas, and to today. Is one of the things that I really learned, particularly at the first Bears camp, watching Sid Luckman, was didn't really matter as much then strength of arm or whether you could run or anything else like that. It was ingrained whether a person really could play that position. How smart the quarterback was then matters as much today as it did then. The difference is, as we talked a little bit about before, is then you had to learn the game plan, you implemented the game plan, whether it was simpler then than it is now, didn't make any difference. You were the person that I said, second only to the President of the United States as far as your value to that team or that business. So in watching quarterbacks, the two things that I watch, one, how quick were his feet? How could he move laterally? Did he step up on the pocket? How did he avoid the rush? And then how he called the plays, even his cadence, which is much different than today. How was he under stress? Who was that person on and off the field? All those things I learned to study when I was 9 or 10 years old, and then refined them as I went along, particularly as the head scout of the Colts and then later on with the Patriots. And again, what is really interesting to me is you look at the quarterbacks we're going to watch this weekend. Let's take the Kansas City game and look at the two quarterbacks. Kansas City, Cincinnati. You've got Burrow, who I compare as far as on-the-field composure to Unitas, Namath to a degree, and of course Tom Brady. You never see them flinch. You never see the attitude on their face change. They're not necessarily, in the case of Burrow, really a great scrambler. Now you have on the other side, you have Patrick Mahomes, who can scramble, who is a tremendous athlete, can do everything. But now you have him limited by a high ankle sprain. I have had a high ankle sprain playing basketball on the college level. Now, I'm not playing football, so I'm not being hit, but I've got to cut, I've got to move, I've got to be able to run. A high ankle sprain, especially on the inside, that you might as well have a broken leg. And I give a lot of credit to Mahomes because you can't do any of those things with that. The pain is intense and it's hard to move. And the day after, like he was going on adrenaline, they probably shut it up last weekend against Jacksonville. But the next day, and I'm sure they're lying about it, and it's not broken, but the next day and the ensuing days, you're in real trouble. And of course, I would like to really be in their practices and see how well he can move, because I think that will dictate that game more than anything else. Both teams have all the great parts. You know, Mahomes has plenty of people to throw to, and first ballot Hall of Famer, Kelce. I mean, there's no question. Can he get the ball to him? Can he move well enough to get it to his other receivers? Are they going to need more of a running game, which I think they will if he's somewhat limited? That's a big question mark going in. Are they able to, on the other hand, stop the perfect pocket passer who can move from time to time if he needs to be? But what an intellect, even though his plays are called for him just like Mahomes is they call him Joe Cool for a reason. Because you see that if I were to tell you that I'm looking at a guy that seemed to be, no matter what the situation to be, is perfectly in control. Never feeling pressure, even if he does. that counts a lot, because if your team sees that and the defense sees that, that they're not going to be able to shake this guy. Then you have quite a contrast while having two of the greatest quarterbacks in the game and two guys headed, barring injury, to the Hall of Fame.
You know, when you speak about Joe Burrow like that, the other guy that comes to my mind that I saw when I was younger, just as a young adult, was Troy Aikman. I mean, to me, that sounds exactly like what I remember Troy Aikman being. And he won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years.
He did, with a great, great surrounding cast. And there's no question that in the case of Burrow, he's got Mixon for the running game, and they really ran well against Buffalo, although Kansas City's going to be a lot different. He has that, and he has great outside. You know, Ja'Marr Chase is as good as anybody in the league. He's got him, and he's got, you know, a lot of weapons.
He's got Higgins, too, who's...
Yes, come along. The Higgins has really come along, because you know you're going to get doubled if you're Chase. But I think Chase can beat any double. And so it's really, they've got a lot of weapons. But again, and I know we're jumping around, but my major mistake was assuming in the Buffalo game that they couldn't run against Buffalo while missing. Think about beating Buffalo with 3 of your offensive linemen missing. And yet they ran against Buffalo better than anybody, which tells you maybe the Buffalo defense was overrated and they're not very big up front. And they just lined the ball up and they ran it against them. And I said, my God, is this the miracle of the fish, the loaves and the fishes? How the hell is this happening? But it did. And that was the extra thing. If Burrow just had to throw, even though he had 2 great receivers and couldn't run it with Mixon, then I think Buffalo, even though they were off, could have won the game. But I said at the end of the first quarter, and I never really say this, I said, this game's over. This game is over. Buffalo can't stop them from running, which makes it easy for this guy to pick them apart, which he did. So you have that on one side, and yet on the other side, If Mahomes was healthy or is healthy enough, and with Kelce, and he has other good receivers, Juju Schuster and another, and they have pretty good running backs. But at home, if Mahomes was healthy, I would pick Kansas City for the first time being able to beat Cincinnati, after Cincinnati being really their daddy for the last 3 games. But that's not the case. And still, because that's not the case, I think the game's a toss-up. I think you could pick either side and make a perfect argument for them. So I'm going to, based upon, and I could be wrong, based upon the injury situation, how much Mahomes can move, I'm going to pick Cincinnati. If it was the other way around, because it's a toss-up, and you usually favor the home team, I would have picked Kansas City. So I'm going with Cincinnati in this game.
All right. So that's the AFC side. And then
now we go to the NFC side. And by the way, I always watch what the people on television are going to do. And you know that this is the game, the Cincinnati-Kansas City game, is the marquee game because it's on at night. It's the last game on. The first game is interesting in its own way, because I think this too is a toss-up for this reason. San Francisco, I think, has the best talent of all 4 teams that are in the conference finals. But I have to be a little leery of Brock Purdy. I know it's been a great story all along. But remember, with Dallas even throwing 2 interceptions, how close that game was. You know, if Dak Prescott had any type of a day, and maybe he can't win the big ones, who the hell knows? But if Prescott had a decent day, I think Dallas would have beaten them. And the reason that they would have beaten them is it isn't that San Francisco doesn't have a lot of people, a lot of Bosa on defense, Kittle, who's right behind Kelsey, and Kittle may be the more complete tight end. They've got all sorts of people that they can feature. But the problem is, again, in your biggest games, even though the coach is calling all the plays, is how do you execute? What happens if the play breaks down? And I don't really know about Purdy. You know, he has, again, he has plenty of weapons, but can the San Francisco 49ers overcome essentially last pick rookie quarterback who seems to be cocky enough, but in the biggest game, can they overcome that with all of their other talent? On the other hand, the Eagles have a question mark. Now, I think the Eagles almost can match the 49ers as far as talent, both offensively and defensively. The question is on Jalen Hurts. I know they say he's recovered from the shoulder injury, but the other thing is, I think he's had a great year. But in my mind, is he the quarterback that can stand back there and throw the ball? Well, he can if he has his running game going and he can put both together. But I put him in the situation of the poor man's Lamar Jackson. Terrific athlete, has had a great year, probably will be the MVP of the NFC. But again, you've got two quarterbacks with doubts about them, less about Hurts, if he is healthy. The Eagles almost match the 49ers as far as talent is concerned. They're pretty damn good. So what am I going to do here? I say that the 49ers have the best talent of all four teams, but I'm going to pick the Eagles. And I'm going to pick the Eagles based only on the fact that Hurts is the more experienced quarterback. They almost have as much talent as the 49ers. And again, I could be totally wrong, but Purdy is not somebody that you go into the game thinking, okay, we've got enough of the other talent, and this kid will do what, you know, Shanahan wants him to do. I don't know. That's a question mark because, again, I go back to Dallas. That game could have been won. That was a low-scoring defensive battle. And this could be the same.
Yeah, I agree. It could be a low-scoring game. And that's a really interesting point you make, is that, you know, we don't know how either of these quarterbacks are going to do. And really, either of these especially on the Eagles side, we don't know how the Eagles are going to fare because the Eagles haven't been in this kind of a game. The 49ers have. But the two quarterbacks, neither of them have been in a game of this magnitude yet in their career. So it'll be interesting to see how each of them do.
Well, name the last time that you saw something like this, where one quarterback is last pick in the draft and is playing because Garoppolo got hurt. And if he was playing with a less than talented team, would you give him any chance whatsoever? I wouldn't.
Oh, that's a great point. That is a great point. Whereas Jalen Hurts, you would give him a bit more of a chance.
I would because the other thing is that Hurts is, you know, he's been around for a couple of years, and he's developed as a quarterback. He can really run. I think that's his game before throwing, but it opens it up for other things. And again, listen, Purdy might end up the hero of the weekend. And that's the other point I think I constantly harp on, maybe over harp on, is going back to Burt Bell's original thing back in the 50s on any given Sunday. Unlike any other sport, there is no tomorrow. There is no second, third, fourth, fifth game. There is no series like Evan, basketball, baseball, hockey. There is nothing. It's what's the other two sports that don't have it?
College basketball.
Yeah. Okay. So, but the sports that do have it are deadly. Boxing. You know, you get in the ring, you lose, you're gone. Tennis, of all sports. You know what? You lose the match, you're gone. And you're not even paid unless you win. So I like, the reason that I like football as well as any, and I have a lot of thoughts about it, the violence, all the other things involved, a lot of the players, Michael, you interview them all the time, ex-players, and most of them will end up the last part of their life in pain, and many will die prematurely. But the thing about it is, if you want me to pay attention to a sport, I want to watch something where the ultimate game is the ultimate game. Either you win or that's it. You don't get any second chances.
Every game is game seven.
That's it. And you know it. And not only that, is it game seven, you have to go out and beat the hell out of somebody. There are no off plays. There's no day. There's nothing. So that's what I think captures the public, particularly the NFL. It captures them that even the teams are lousy, and I've seen a lot of bad football this year. But I know this. The game's going to end in 60 minutes, and there's going to be somebody that wins. Now, the other thing that the NFL has going for them now that I'm against is the betting angle. And the betting angle, if you're sitting there and you know there's only one game to bet on this weekend, there are two games to bet on, and you've got all these figures being thrown at you, and all the measuring sticks and yardsticks are out there, and the analytics people, and you're being blasted from the day after the game right through to the game. And listen, I know friends of mine that don't bet, and they say, you know what, I never bet, but I've got to put some money on the Patriots, or I've got to put some money on the Bengals. Why not? What's a few bucks? Well, if everybody puts a few bucks on that, the DraftKings of the world and the NFL are making a fortune. So you've got all of that, all of those things coming together on one point, and that's why there's an explosion. There was a guy on last night with Bryant Gumbel on the HBO series, which I like, Real Sports, and he was asked, he's one of the big advertisers, he places advertisements everywhere, and he said, if you had your choice of anything to advertise on, what would it be? And he said, the Super Bowl. Now, it's one day, and some of these advertisers are going to spend $5, $10 million for a 30-second to a minute spot. Think about that. Think about where it's come from when people didn't even recognize the NFL to today. Did Bert Bell ever foresee back when they were struggling in the 30s, 40s? Well, even though the sudden death game in New York changed everything in 1958, still, how many years did it take where did anybody think then that today you'd be able to get $5 to $10 million for a 30 to 60 second spot for their championship game? It's amazing.
Yeah, the teams weren't even worth anything near that.
No, are you kidding? All of those, from my father, Art Rooney, all of those people, George Halas, none of them ever thought that. Even although I did say this starting in the 60s, I remember some when I was trying to put together a group to buy back my father's team, the Eagles, in 1968. And one of these big investors, a smartass with all his lawyers, came in and said, prove to me that this is worth my millions of dollars in investment. What we're talking about, think about this then. We're talking about putting the group together that was interested in buying back the Eagles for $15 million. And finally, when Leonard Toews got it out of bankruptcy court, my group lost, or I think it was $16 or $17 million, and people were going, never get that price again. And I remember saying to the lawyers and the investors, I said, let me tell you something. Tell me the next time any NFL team is going to be sold for less than what it was bought for. And it's never happened. Never. Take the worst team in football, and you're going to get some sucker that will buy it for now billions. So there we are. It's amazing.
It truly is how far it's come. Now, Upton, one last thing I wanted to ask you about this championship weekend was you were director of player personnel for the Baltimore Colts in 1970, and they played in the very first AFC championship game, and that was against the Raiders. What do you remember about that game?
Well, a lot, in that I thought we'd blow the Raiders out, but it was fairly close. In fact, it was so funny because John Madden and I had become real good friends. We were both very young at the time, and I had met John actually when he was at San Diego State. And I remember talking to him later about Fred Dreyer, who I loved, and I eventually traded for, although he never played here. But I remember it was a young team. Madden was a young coach trying to prove himself. I was surprised that year that we made it to that championship game, you know, preceding the Super Bowl, because on the second or third week of the season, we got blown out by Kansas City. I thought it'd be Kansas City instead of Oakland that we played. In the first round, we beat Paul Brown's Bengals, and then we had them in the championship game with the mad bomber, Daryl LaMonica, and it was a fairly close game, but I thought, you know, we were just too good for them then. And, of course, we won the game. But I do remember Madden. I remember all of those players. Some of them went to the Hall of Fame. But it was just kind of the beginning of his career. Of course, he went on to be a Hall of Fame coach. And with all of those players, and we're just developing them. Many of them I scouted in college. So I thought to myself, we're really lucky in some ways to get by them. And then I thought privately that we had no chance against Dallas. Looking at Dallas's team, I mean, they should have blown us out in that Super Bowl. They had Dwayne Thomas, who I, again, traded for the following year when I came to the Patriots, and he lasted all of 1 week. But in football, there's the other factor that even talking about the games this weekend, whether it was against Oakland in the championship game and then the Super Bowl against the Dallas Cowboys, you have to somewhere in the game be lucky. You have to somewhere get a lucky bounce, an interception, particularly if the other team's much better. And in that case, three things happened to us that were really good. Tom Landry's crazy idea that he had to alternate quarterbacks, that he had to have Craig Morton and Staubach, he had to alternate quarterbacks. And then getting down each time to the goal line, and the guy that I thought was the second coming of Jimmy Brown, Dwayne Thomas, fumbling. And then again, what were the big breaks at the end? The Morton pass tipped Mike Curtis, who I drafted number one years before, makes the interception, and the guy that kicks the field goal, who we all thought, oh my God, he's got ulcers, he'll choke, Jim O'Brien, who I had to fight to draft, kicks the winning field goal. Never should have been close. The Mackey thing, the tip ball, was it hit by another person before Mackey caught it? I don't think so. So all of that was involved in us winning when we really had the superior team and lost in 1968, of course, the upset of the century, when we lost to the New York Jets. So that element, you need the breaks. You need somebody to do something you never expected doing. And also, you can have on the other end, Dak Prescott being a failure again. So all of that went into it. and it was an amazing year and amazing time. We were in, during my time there, 1960 War Championship, the 1965 playoff game that we should have won, the 1967 game when we were unbeaten to the last game of the season, the 1968 season when we came within one of holding the record of most victories in the season, and then in 1970 when nobody picked us to do anything and we won it. You got to be lucky.